Welcome back to another episode of the Life Lady Podcast in 2020.
Yay!
Oh my gosh, I can't believe we're officially here.
Mm-hmm.
We're officially here, Soph, and it's going to be a fantastic year.
It will be.
And we're starting this one off with a big banger. We have a very special guest in the house.
We sure do.
We have our wonderful, much loved sound producer guy. He is our producer.
Basically. Sound engineer, producer.
He's the one that brings the podcast to you, to your wonderful ears every Monday.
Absolutely.
He's the drink bringer.
Drink bringer, chips buyer.
Chips buyer.
Babysitter.
Babysitter. He's just an all-round fantastic guy.
Basically. IT support, name it.
We are giving him big, big props here.
Absolutely.
So, Soph, would you like to introduce him?
Yes, I'll be very happy to do that. So, we are very pleased to be joined by my husband, Carl.
Woo-hoo!
Say hi.
Hello, ladies.
Hey, Carl.
It's not just ladies. Excuse me. There's men who listen.
Yes, the men listen too.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, so, the ladies, I meant you two.
Oh, right.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Carl. How you doing?
I'm good. That was quite an intro.
Yes.
Well, I'm not done
Which
yet.
Is not
actually,
done.
I'm not done yet.
So yeah.
Yeah. So on top of the many things that he does for us here on the podcast, which of course we are so grateful for,
mm-hmm.
he spends a lot of time to put everything together for us and edit it, and you know, he sits with me and makes sure that it's done. But he is a professional management consultant.
Woo.
And specializes in project management, strategic transformation, and financial education. He is qualified in financial planning, and today he'll be able to give us a quick overview on how we can manage our finances better in the new year.
Yes, please.
Just a quick disclaimer. The information that is given here does not constitute professional financial advice. Please, please, please go and seek out your own advice from a qualified, independent financial advisor. So let's get this started. It's a new year. Salaries were paid around mid-December.
A long time ago.
And we all know they need to stretch until January the 65th. And I know many people are just eating baked beans because it's all people can afford.
Mm.
We've spent all our money on
mm-hmm.
Christmas and, you know, so
Mad.
Many parties
Mad.
And gifts and New Year things.
And we're
so
not even halfway through.
We're
January.
Not even, there's a long way to
there's
go, people.
There's a long way to go.
But hopefully, Carl can help us manage our finances better this year. So,
give us some tips.
Carl. Yeah, give us
want some tips.
Where
well,
should we
well,
start?
Well, no pressure, eh?
No pressure.
So, obviously, you know, being a new year, people will have pulled together the usual New Year's resolutions and,
mm-hmm.
You know, they'll be looking to make changes. But I think for me, I tend to approach finances pretty much like my health.
Okay.
So it's important to have a plan
mm-hmm.
and a clear view of what's going on in your finances before you can get moving. So the first thing I'd say is you just need to carry out a financial surgery. And by surgery, what I mean is, excuse me, when you start out, bear in mind that if you spend more than you earn,
mm-hmm.
then obviously you're going to have nothing to live on.
Mm-hmm.
If you earn more than you spend, you can have surplus.
Mm-hmm.
So the key thing here is you always want to either spend less than you earn or earn more than you spend.
Yes.
That way you will always have something left over.
Mm-hmm.
So what I mean by financial surgery is take stock of where you are right now.
Mm-hmm.
Figure out what is actually going on in your financial life.
Mm.
How much money are you bringing in?
Mm.
How much is going out? Where is it going out to?
Mm-hmm.
Figure out if there is money you're owed. So for example, you know, there are some people who get tax rebates usually at the end
I
of
never,
January.
Yeah, that's
enough. I'll always wait until April. Wait him for that brown paper.
Bam
yeah.
envelope, not a hat.
Yeah.
I get nothing. Nothing.
So there's things like that.
Yeah.
There may be also things that you're paying for that you don't need to pay for.
Yes.
So, you know, for example, you may be paying a direct debit on maybe something that you bought ages ago and you've already finished paying for it, but you've never canceled the direct debit and it's still continuing to go out. So that's what I mean by financial surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Look through all your standing orders. look through all the payments you're making, mm-hmm. figure out exactly where your money is going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big thing, actually, because a lot of us don't do that.
Nope.
I think we just see the bank balance at the end,
mm-hmm.
and we assume that that is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
We hardly ever go back. I know finance is one of those things where you bury your head in the sand,
mm.
and you pray that everything is somehow balancing itself out. Mm. And either you could be, as Carl said, you could be making payments on things that you no longer need, no longer use. Even phones, what are they called?
Insurance.
Not insurance, but even insurance, but contracts.
Yeah, phone contracts.
Phone contracts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And things that, you know, are redundant.
Mm-hmm.
You're still paying for them, but also what is owed you.
Exactly.
We are not good at collecting what people want. By the way, listen, if you owe me £5, I'm coming for it.
2020. 2020. That clear vision you were talking about.
Yes.
See you, honey. I see you.
If you owe me something, I'm after you. Yeah, but that's a very good...
that is very good.
A very good surgery. first point. Yeah.
But actually, you mentioned something there, which is, you know, burying your head in the sand. And that's the worst possible thing you can do.
Of course.
Because if you bury your head in the sand and you expect things to change, then they will never change. If anything, they'll actually get worse.
Yes.
And all you're doing is denying what's going on. So either way, it's good to find out and do a financial surgery of where you are. Because if things are going well, then you know exactly how they are going well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If they are not going so well, then at least you know exactly where things are not going well. And then you can put in a plan of action to sort it out.
Yeah. Okay.
So that would be the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the second thing I would say is once you figure out where you are, then have a clear plan.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the plan has to be in two steps. So mm-hmm. the first thing is make a plan for where you are currently based on the income you're earning right now.
Okay.
Mm, that's a good one.
Because there's no point making, you know, a plan for the future if you don't sort out where you are right now.
Mm-hmm.
So start from where you are and make a plan based on the income you're earning now
mm-hmm.
and start tackling the expenses and reducing them so that they can be less than what you're making.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
Then alongside that, make another plan. And the second plan is a plan for where you'd like to be financially.
Okay. Yeah.
So think about how much money would I need to be making to live the lifestyle that I would like to live, say 2, 3, 5 years from now.
Okay.
And then start working towards that plan.
Yeah.
But obviously starting from the current plan.
Okay.
So are we talking about, is the current plan a budget and the future plan is like a proposed... I don't know what to call it.
Yes.
One is a budget.
So they are both budgets.
They're both budgets.
The current one is a budget,
mm-hmm.
but behind that budget, you really need to don't just look at it from a financial perspective. Tie it to your values as well.
Okay.
So it's things like, for example, is there a charitable cause that I feel very strongly about that I want to give to?
Yes.
Then you put that in your budget and say, this is how much I'm going to give to this charity.
Yes.
If it is your income, you say, okay, I'm earning this much. What kind of company am I working in right now? Does it fit in with where I want to go in my career, for example?
Mm-hmm.
So the budget is more than just numbers. It ties into your life as
well. It's reflecting what's important.
It's reflecting, exactly. It's reflecting what's important to your life.
Yes.
That's the key difference here.
Because
people, when you talk to people about budgets, they think of it as a boring accounting exercise, which you have to go through every month.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a tick box exercise.
Yeah.
But when you tie it to your life and what's important to you, then you're more likely to stay disciplined on it and keep going.
Mm, that's good.
That's really good. And I must say, I mean, my husband does this faithfully. And Sophie's always trying to escape the budget conversation. I'm like, man, do I have to do this again? And so I'm like, yeah, it's important to do that. I don't know, Mel, are you good with budgeting?
No.
No? That would be a no.
Yeah, that would be a hell no. I tried so many things. There's one time that in the new year, I tried to do the whole put away £1 a week. And then escalate to £2 a week and blah, blah. And to the point where at the end of the month, it would be like £5 or whatever I put away.
Yeah.
That worked for about 2 weeks. All of 1 week. Another time is I try to take out, after all my bills and everything like that's paid for, then I want to take out, say, £100, and that had to last me as cash for the rest of the month. Do I get paid? Yeah, that didn't work either. But, you know, I want to get back into
it. I tried.
But the reason why that didn't work, so things come up, like someone's birthday or, and so it's along with the budgeting, it's how to say no as well and be very strong in that. Because there'll be, it's just little small things that you think, oh, it's only £5 here, it's only £20 there. And then all of a sudden it adds up and it escalates. And it's, those small things that you don't factor in. Because, you can budget, okay, this is for travel.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's that whole budgeting, the unexpected things that will come up.
Yeah, and I mean, a good one that I've heard of a lot is, you know, when you talk about unforeseen expenditure, it's things like lunch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you work, say, in London or in any other major city, a sandwich and juice and a packet of crisps will set you back £3. Between £3 and £5. If you go to Tesco.
Ten? Where are you eating?
Tet, honey.
If you go to Tesco, maybe £3. If you're eating at Pret, maybe double that.
Listen, I work in South Kensington, honey.
But there we are. Okay. So here is the thing.
There's no Tesco Express in South Kensington.
Dry bread from Tesco.
Dry bread.
But you know what? To be honest, stale bread. But I do bring my own lunch. I do bring my own lunch.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. So
but most of us actually don't.
Most of us don't. There's that cup of coffee that you get from Costa or Starbucks. That's £3 a day.
Mm-hmm.
So it does all add up. So I think when you're talking about budgets, and by the way, you don't have to, you know, create it from scratch and reinvent the wheel.
Mm.
There are loads of templates that you can find on the internet where you can actually get, you know, budgets already laid out for you.
Yeah.
So all you need to do is just plug in numbers.
Yes.
But the thing I'd say is when you're looking at a budget, there are a few key areas you want to look at. Number one, obviously, is your income.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say income, don't think about the gross salary that you make per year. Or per month.
Yeah.
It is what actually hits your bank account.
Yes.
Because that's what you're going to live on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the income I'm talking about. So it's net income.
Yes.
Put that in your budget. When you talk about expenses, there are key things: housing, bills, clothes,
transport,
food. Those are obvious things. Then there are other things like if you have a car, you'll obviously have to do an annual service on it and you'll have to do an MOT. You already know on average how much that is going to cost. So you can set aside that money,
some money every month,
and save it every month so that when something goes wrong with the car, you're not having to borrow to go and fix it. You've already prepared for it. So there are things like that you can prepare for. But then there are also unforeseen things that can happen. So for that, I tend to do, you know, on average, maybe say 5 or 10% of whatever is left after you've paid for all the major expenses. That's the rule of thumb. I'd say keep that as unforeseen expenses, because you can't prepare for absolutely everything. But you can. There are things that you know that will happen that you can prepare for.
Yes. Yeah.
Cool.
Wow. Thanks for that, Carl.
Very cool.
What would you say is a third thing that we can do this year?
So once you've done your budget, remember we already did an assessment of where you are, whether you're spending more than you bring in, or maybe you're spending less. The first thing I'd say is clear debt.
Debt is
one of those things that actually robs you if you don't manage it carefully. Because what it does is it takes away what you could have done in the future and bring it forward now, but you're actually paying for it now. So that money that you would have used is already committed to paying the debt. And the problem is, because you're paying debt, you don't actually have a choice over how to use that money.
It's different when the money is sitting in your account.
Exactly.
And you can deploy it whichever way you want.
Exactly.
To, as opposed to it's already been decided where it has to go.
Spot on. And by the way, when things go thick and it hits the fan, the guy you owe has more precedence over you.
Yes.
So if you owe somebody money, then they are the ones who have to get paid first before, you know,
your needs get met.
Mm. Which is why I said when I talked about do the financial surgery, you'll be able to see very clearly if debt is a big part of what you're paying out, that's the thing you have to tackle. Because when you sort out that debt, then you have more in your kitty, even assuming your income doesn't change.
Mm-hmm.
You have more that you can deploy. And by debt here, let me just qualify what I mean by debt. What I mean is short-term debt. So things like credit cards, overdrafts, unsecured loans.
So you're not talking like a mortgage?
I'm not talking about a mortgage. By debt, I'm saying anything that you have used to buy something that does not appreciate in value.
So, a depreciating asset.
Yes. Anything that is a depreciating asset and that is short term in nature.
Yes.
So things like, you basically go to, a high street shop and you spend £200 to buy sneakers.
Yeah.
And then you don't pay off that credit card in full.
Mm.
And then you get charged interest every month on top of that money. So the £200 that you owed at the beginning ends up becoming thousands of pounds because you're not paying it off. It's that kind of debt
and the shoe has depreciated.
Yeah, so, the shoe probably is not worth the amount that you end up owing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with a mortgage, that's different because it's associated with a house. A house is generally seen as an asset that hopefully will add value over time.
Yes, okay.
So, and that is longer term debt that you're paying over 10, 15, 20 years. So that's different. Not many people can pay off a mortgage quickly.
No. Would you put a car loan into the short term?
Yeah, see, for me, I have my own theory on car loans. So for me, I don't see a car as an asset.
Yeah.
I see a car as a liability because it's there really to take you from A to B.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, if you are borrowing to pay for a car, then pay it off as quickly as possible.
Mm.
And then the question I'd ask myself is, if I cannot afford it, do I have to buy, that car? I could get another car that maybe is slightly older, maybe it's well maintained and still pay less.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing you have to remember with cars as well is that they also lose value very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So on average between 20 and 25% a year. Mm-hmm. So if you take a car loan that's lasting 10 years, there is no way that car will be worth what you have paid off for that car if you have taken a loan.
Yeah.
So for me, my personal philosophy is if you can afford to pay for that car outright cash, then do it.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to borrow, then borrow as little as possible, but top up your savings to buy that car.
Mm.
Okay. Understood. Okay. So credit cards. Wow.
I've cut up my credit. I don't have you? Oh, hell yes, girl. That was
well
a devil.
Done.
That was the
I think
devil.
I need to do the same. Oh, although I'm going to give myself a challenge. She says.
I can't wait to hear this one.
Your husband is
that
here.
Is
one. What's the challenge, though?
There's this challenge that I've seen people do. And I don't know how practical it is. It sounds good in theory. But it's a no year spend or a no spend year? Basically, you are not going to purchase anything unless you absolutely need it. So for me, I know my thing is shoes. I'm always coming home with a new shoe.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Carl, by the way, is nodding his head very enthusiastically. Yes.
I can attest that is the truth.
Like the Churchill dog. Yes.
And let the church say amen.
Amen. I love a shoe. but I mean, I have honestly, let me think about this before I put it out there. No, I have enough high heels. Okay. I definitely do not need another pair of high heels. I might need a new pair of boots only because I have worn them all year and they're now starting to,
They got a hole now.
They've got a hole. So I need
to water going through and stuff.
Yeah.
It is winter season anyway. So
yes.
And I
walk a lot. You know that.
Yeah.
So those shoes are done now. But the no spend year challenge is unless you must buy it, you do not buy it.
Interesting.
So it means like for me, interiors, It means I have enough duvets. I have enough, what are these called? Cushions. I have enough plates. Why am I spending on all this stuff?
Yeah, so you see, another version I've seen of that mm-hmm. is where people say, instead of no spend here, people say, I'm not going to buy something mm-hmm. unless I have planned for it and I've actually uh-huh. saved up for it.
Yeah, okay, okay.
There is that.
Don't go putting ideas in Sophie's head.
That's another version I've seen. So, and for me, I think I prefer that one because it commits you to actually thinking through, do I really need this thing?
Yes.
And then there's this concept of delayed gratification.
Oh yeah.
You know, so
that's no fun.
So and we'll talk about that a bit more when I come on to the next point that I'll make.
Uh-huh.
But delayed gratification is important because you know there is no point in you spending everything you have today when actually if you had given up some of what you can spend today, you can actually have what you really want tomorrow.
But it's not today though, is it?
No. And this that is the thing may it's not be there available anymore.
But this is the thing. It's a discipline thing.
I must say, Carl is very disciplined.
You are very disciplined, Carl.
Me personally.
Me too. I get heart palpitations whenever I walk to a shop because I hear the voices saying,
<Your head.
laughs> it's going to be great, Mel. You are going to look so fine.
You want to buy this?
Another tenth, striped shirt or top. Okay?
Exactly.
And I'm like, oh, okay.
Do you know how many white t-shirts I cleared out of my other day? I was like, first of all, I work from home. Why do I have 16 white t-shirts? And all of them fit.
Mm.
None of them has a hole.
I'm
like, what is my obsession with white t-shirts? I just see a white t-shirt and I'm like, I need a white t-shirt. Let me take you home with me. Let me give you a nice warm place to stay.
I know.
I think to be fair though, yes, there is a lot of FOMO that goes on, especially when you're talking about buying stuff. But also, I think things have changed. So the way things are in our day and age, so many products are released so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then fashion trends change so
quickly.
And the
influences on
and the
I'm blaming the influences.
So there's that thing of, if I don't get it now, I'll never get it.
Yeah.
And then the sad thing is,
yeah.
you realize maybe 3-6 months from now, what you got is actually out of vogue now.
Yeah.
So there is that pressure. But mm-hmm. again, at the same time, I think I like to put it through the filter of, how important is this thing that I want to buy and can I actually do without it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So there is a bit of that, and I think you know, let's not fall into the illusion that you actually don't have choice, because at the end of the day, it is your money. You've worked hard for it, and you have the absolute right to exercise control over where it goes.
So I can't blame the influencer. No.
Okay.
But I think the key point that I'm actually taking from this is debt is a thief.
Mm.
We think that it's giving us something, but it's actually robbing us, not only of what you just spent, because usually it's on things that you don't need, but then it robs even more
because of the interest.
Because of the interest. You end up paying more.
But let me qualify that. It's not debt per se. It is bad debt.
Bad debt.
Bad debt.
What is
because
good debt?
There is good debt. Mm-hmm. So good debt is where, say, for example, you want to buy a house.
Yeah.
So that qualifies as good debt because you know, and very few people these days have money that they can buy a house cash.
Yes.
So most people will take a mortgage.
Yeah.
So a mortgage in itself is not a bad debt because it's enabling you to secure a roof over your head.
Yeah.
So instead of you paying rent, you're actually paying towards something that you'll end up owning.
Yeah.
Now the trick is, even though it's good debt, again, the same principle applies. If you can pay off that debt sooner, then do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is still a debt.
Yeah.
And the longer you take to pay for it, the more you actually end up paying than you would have paid if you had exercised some discipline.
Yeah.
So yes, it's still, so there is bad debt, then there is good debt. So for me, bad debt is anything that you borrow for to buy something that does not actually add any value or appreciate in value, whereas good debt is, you know, something that obviously appreciates over time.
Okay,
cool.
All right, so moving on.
The fourth thing I said, so once you've dealt with your debt, then obviously look at your savings
okay.
and start saving.
Mm-hmm.
And saving you need to break it up into short term, medium term, mm-hmm. and then there is long term.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Earlier on, we talked about the principle of delayed gratification, and it applies perfectly in savings.
Yeah,
that's really what it is about.
Mm-hmm.
It is robbing yourself of something that you want today.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
to be able to sort yourself out for tomorrow.
Yeah.
So when we talk about short term saving, what I mean by this, and it goes back to your financial plan, mm-hmm. is short term savings are the things that you want to acquire within the next 1 year, maybe even okay. 2 years.
Short-term? I thought it was months.
Well, it depends what you're buying.
Yeah.
If it's a pair of shoes, you can get that in a month if you save 50 quid, for example.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if it's something that is a bit more costly, say, for me, maybe some music equipment, yeah. I'll have to save for a bit longer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So short-term saving is anything in my book that you would be looking to buy in the next 1 to 2 years.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be something physical. It could be a special vacation.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause vacations, again, are not cheap either.
Mm-hmm.
So those are things that you save towards. Medium-term saving is something that, say, you want to get within the next 3 to 5 years.
Okay.
So say if it's a new car.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That would be a good example.
Mm-hmm. So I had 3 to 5 years to buy a new car.
Okay.
Okay. Delayed gratification.
Yeah.
Must remember.
Then long-term saving is anything you're talking... Well, actually, medium-term can go up to even maybe seven, 8 years.
Okay.
Right? So that could be... medium-term could be something like saving up for a deposit to buy a house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That would be a good example of medium-term.
Mm-hmm.
Long term is now anything that you are saving towards for over 10 to 15, maybe 20, 25 years. So a good example of long term saving is your pension.
Okay.
Because your pension is what is going to feed you, is one of the things mm-hmm. that would feed you when you stop working.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because obviously we're all getting older. We won't be able to work forever.
Yeah.
So part of the reason why you delay gratification is for those years. So the way I put it is, the old man that is waiting for you,
mm-hmm.
or the old woman
mm-hmm.
that is waiting for you 20, 30 years from now, is dependent on the decisions that the young woman or man is making today.
Ooh, yeah. My question about the savings, though, so would you have different savings? Like multiple savings going at the same time.
Yes. Obviously, within your budget and what you can afford. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
So an example would be if you have a car, like I said, you know that you'll have to service it annually. You have to take it for an MOT. That's something that you know will happen every year. Mm-hmm. And you have to pay insurance for it unless you pay for it monthly. But if you pay for insurance once a year, you mm-hmm. know that you're going to have to pay for it. So that qualifies as short-term saving because you know that will happen. So set a separate pot aside for insurance. If you are saving for a deposit to buy a house, then that's a different pot.
Mm.
And even the type of account that it would go into
mm-hmm.
is not easily accessible.
Yeah, you don't want an account that you can dip in.
Trust me.
Exactly.
If you're trying to save for a house.
Yeah.
Otherwise, so it won't happen.
It won't happen, exactly. Yeah. So this is why you have to bucket them. So if it's short-term saving, it's something you want immediately.
Yeah.
If it is medium-term, that obviously is in a less accessible account.
Mm-hmm.
If it's long-term like pension, well, you can't access your pension anyway until you're age 55. So that is truly long-term.
Yeah.
Can I also just say something else on saving?
Mm-hmm.
So within saving, you also need to consider
mm-hmm.
putting aside an emergency fund.
Yeah.
That is really, really critical.
Yeah.
Because anything can happen
mm-hmm.
and you could be in a situation where maybe you're made redundant, you're out of work. For those who are self-employed, you could find yourself not able to get a business from clients. So you need to set aside living expenses for the eventuality that there is no income coming in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for me, I tend to treat that as an immediate priority.
Yes.
In terms of savings.
Yeah.
So you.
And I think I discussed this, I think 2 episodes back when we were discussing what we learned in 2019. 2019.
Yeah.
Where I shared, our situation. And we lived out of our emergency savings.
Mm.
And I think we had, 10 months?
Yes.
10 months. Oof. Child. Do you know, when you look at that money, when you're saving for emergency savings, and it's a lot of money, and you're making plans for that money.
Yeah.
Until the universe decides that it has a plan for you, and you have to dip into those finances. Exactly. It was so helpful.
Exactly right.
Having that money set aside, because then we didn't have to worry about our day to day, at least our basics.
Yeah.
Our basics were absolutely covered.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So,
do you think you should save a certain? Should you save the emergency savings based on your current income? Should it be equal to your income or just equal to your expenditure? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So the view I tend to take on that is base it on your current income,
mm-hmm.
because that is the lifestyle that you are trying to maintain right now.
Okay.
Based on what you earn. Mm-hmm. However,
mm-hmm.
when you're thinking about the expenditure side,
mm-hmm.
you don't base it on what you're spending right now. Base it on the bare minimum that you need to spend to live.
Mm.
Okay. So you're saving more.
Yeah.
But when the time comes, you'll be actually living on less.
On less, exactly. Okay. So for example, if within my current expenditure, I am already catering for my savings. If I have no income coming in, there's no point of me saving,
mm-hmm.
because I have no income, you know, that is able to help me save.
Mm-hmm.
So my expenditure will definitely exclude some of my savings,
yes.
if I'm living on my emergency fund, because technically I'm living on savings. So it doesn't make sense to save when you're living on saving.
Absolutely. Also, when you're let's say you have debt and you're trying to save at the same time.
Mm.
Are you saying that you'd rather you don't save and
pay off the debt,
or can you do both?
No, you can. That's a good question. So you can do both. So when you're tackling debt, the first thing to do is look at the most expensive debt that has the lowest balance first, because
most expensive in terms of the
interest? Terms of the interest and the amount and you're the amount. Paying.
Okay.
So clear that first.
Okay.
Then whatever you are paying toward that debt, you can either apply it to the next debt,
mm-hmm.
or apply it to saving.
Okay.
And then you tackle the next debt in the same way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So for every debt that you're clearing, you can then split that amount that you are paying toward that debt that is now cleared between saving and clearing the next debt. So you can absolutely do both at the same time.
Okay.
But it depends, like I said, on what your income is and what your debt levels are.
Because
there may be some situations where it is better for you to clear your debt first
before you
save.
Because
it might not be sustainable for you to do both.
For sure.
Yes. Okay. And I think this is where an independent financial advisor is so important.
Yeah.
They can work through various scenarios.
Exactly.
With you, right?
Yeah.
And
exactly.
advise you on what is best to do.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then just one more point on saving. So if you're employed, the scenarios I've talked about just previously apply for when you're employed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you're self-employed, there are other saving scenarios that you need to consider. So one of them is for your taxes, because when you're self-employed, you pay your taxes at the end of the year.
Mm. Okay.
At the end
and
of
like,
your...
It's not every month.
It's not every month.
Yeah.
Mm.
So don't make the mistake of thinking that the income that you're bringing into your business is yours to keep. You have got to set some aside for the tax man.
Yes. Mm.
Otherwise, you'd be in trouble.
Mm.
So when we say saving, it's also saving to meet future liabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Like tax is one of them.
And I suppose if you had an accountant or someone, they will be able to tell you roughly the rough estimate of what your tax you're going to pay at the end of the year will be, so then you have a judgment of
absolutely how much you need to pay. And these days you have very clever IT programs anyway, and accounting software that usually tells on a running basis how much you'll owe. So then you can actually plan better and set that aside.
Okay. Just before we move on to the next point, can you touch briefly on pensions? Because pensions is one of those things that I don't understand pensions at all. I mean, you start a new job, you're given a pension pack, and you're supposed to figure it out. And my way of figuring it out is giving it to my dear husband, who has qualified in such matters, and he picks out a pension for me. So I don't understand it, and I live with you.
Mm.
Can you help the rest of us just break it down so, very quickly?
That's a good question, because I've heard this before. People tend to have a phobia when it comes to pensions, that they are so complicated, they are difficult to understand. But I'll break it down as simply as I can. So when it comes to pensions, there are two basic types of pensions.
Mm-hmm.
One is called a defined benefit scheme,
mm-hmm.
and the other one is called a defined contribution scheme.
Mm-hmm.
So defined benefit schemes are the ones that you may have heard people calling final salary schemes.
Yeah.
And the reason they are called final salary schemes is because with those pensions, you know what you're getting at the end of it. That's why it's called final salary.
Okay.
Because the pension that you get paid is some sort of variant of the final salary that you would be on by the time you retire.
Okay.
Sometimes they take an average of your earnings over a certain period, and then they say you're going to get maybe 2/3 of that money as your
mm-hmm.
pension.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they say it could be the average of the salary that you are earning in the last 3 years of your working life. Different schemes have different criteria for okay. determining what the final salary is. But the main thing is, with a defined benefit scheme, you know what you're getting at the end of it.
Okay.
That's why it's called defined benefit.
Yeah.
Now, defined contribution is also called money purchase. So defined contribution is the one that you know what you're paying into every month.
Mm-hmm.
So you know the amount you're paying. You don't necessarily know what you're getting out of it. That's the difference between the two of them.
That sucks.
So, but what the pension providers do is, obviously they can't guarantee what you will get at the end of it, but they can give you an indication of what you can get out of the pension based on what you're paying in. And if you're employed, what your employer is paying in as well.
Okay.
So this is the thing with pensions. Pensions is not just saving that you make.
Mm-hmm.
So your most employers, actually all employers, have got to give you pension provision.
Mm-hmm.
But you obviously have a choice to opt out or in. So most employers will match your contribution. So if you pay 3%, then they pay 3%.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, the government also adds in money.
Mm-hmm.
So the tax that you would have paid on that money, the government actually pays into your pension.
Okay.
So, and then the pension itself grows tax-free. It's mm-hmm. not taxed. And then at the end of it, that's when you get...
So that's why they tax you when you're taking your pension out.
That's why they tax you when you take your pension out. Because
like you've been taxing me all my life.
Exactly. Yeah. But for your pension, any money that goes into your pension is not taxed.
Okay.
Mm. And then it grows tax-free.
Okay.
And then at the end of it...
When you're taking it out.
At the end of it, when you're taking it out, you get up to 25% of it as tax-free cash.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of it, you get now as an income, which is taxed.
Okay. Understood. Thank you so much for that.
Thanks.
Okay. Moving on. What's the fifth thing we can do?
So the fifth thing I'd say is protect yourself in case of the worst.
Mm-hmm.
So like we said earlier, you never know what will happen. No one knows the future.
Mm.
So any prudent person will make sure that they protect themselves as much as possible in the event of something happening that is unforeseen. The obvious tool that people use for this is insurance. So, you know, most people take car insurance, holiday insurance when you're traveling. You would have buildings insurance if you own your house.
Yes.
You'd have contents insurance maybe if you're renting
life.
And you want to take care of your goods.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, life insurance as well.
Yeah.
You'd insure your own
definitely.
Life in the event of anything happening. So the insurance is a good tool for that.
Okay.
There are also other types of insurances like income protection, which is where if you're unable to work. For whatever reason, maybe through critical illness or you're incapacitated, then an insurance policy can pay you basically an income, a percentage of your income until you're age 65. So that's what income protection is.
Yeah.
So insurance is critical.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're employed, most employers also have things like employee benefits.
Mm-hmm.
One of the benefits that employers offer is something called death in service benefit.
Yeah.
So death in service benefit is basically a multiple of your salary, whatever your salary is, and it is paid to your dependents or your family in the event of your death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the reason I mentioned death in service is because it is something that protects your family in the event of you passing on.
Yeah, because the burden is not left on them.
Yeah,
yeah. So that they lost an income. Exactly. Yeah. So when you're considering life insurance, if you're employed, you want to take into account that death in service benefit, because there is no point of you going to get life insurance for more than you need when your employer already has death in service benefit provided to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Depending on whether they do or not. Mm. Some employers don't, but most do.
Okay.
The other thing I'd say with protection is do not pay for more than you need.
Yeah.
Mm. There's no point over-insuring for something, because to be honest, you can only ever usually claim on one insurance policy at a time. So I'll give you a good example. So most bank accounts these days come as bundled packages. What that means is they'll offer you a bank account, they'll offer you travel insurance, they'll offer you some sort of gift vouchers to go and buy from things from retail stores. So with travel insurance, if you have travel insurance on your bank account, there's no point of you going to get another travel insurance policy if the one on your bank account actually covers
that. Yes. Yeah, for sure.
So that's what I mean by over-insuring. Don't over-insure. And because if you do over-insure, then you're ending up paying for something that you won't use.
Because you can only claim on one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. And finally, what's the last thing you can do?
So the last thing is, after you've put your plan together, you've sorted out your budget, you're clearing your debt, you've put your saving plan in and you've protected yourself. Obviously, it's not a one-off exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to constantly review your situation and update and tweak it to suit your circumstances at whatever point you are in your life.
Yeah.
But then the other thing is, once you're in a comfortable position where you are spending less than you earn, you have a surplus, and you have followed these steps, the next thing you need to start thinking about is future-proofing. So what I mean by future-proofing is, think about the situation of what would happen in the event that you are incapacitated for any reason. And you're not able to manage your affairs. What would happen in the event of you passing away suddenly? Because, you know, anything can happen. We don't know when our time will come, but we know it will come.
Yeah.
So if you're not able to manage your affairs, but you're still alive, there is this thing called power of attorney. So power of attorney basically enables a trusted person to be able to manage your affairs if you're not able to, both on your finances and also on your health matters. So it is, and you can do this for free, actually, if you look it up from the Office of the Public Guardian. The other thing is, with the power of attorney, you can put that in place, obviously, anytime. But it doesn't kick in until it's absolutely required. So it's something that you can have in place.
Yeah.
But
it's just to safeguard
you. It's just to safeguard you in the event of something happening.
Cool.
With wills, I would say the minute you get an asset, say like a house, that is the time to make a will. You can make a will at any time, but it is better to do it when you have an asset, because it would be a crying shame if you work all your life, you put in all the discipline, you save up, and you make something of yourself. And then at the end of it, when you pass on, the people who you've left behind have no idea what your wishes are. And then even worse is, in some cases, if you don't have a will, what they call that is the laws of intestate apply. So then that means, in some cases,
the government
will basically take over your estate. And
that's unfortunate.
That is very unfortunate. You know, for you to have worked all your life only to give it back to the government.
Yeah.
I mean,
really, that's not fair.
Yeah.
So I would say, put a will in place as quickly as possible. It doesn't have to be complicated. It's best if you do it via lawyer, in my view. But it is something, at least, that, you know, you can actually determine what happens to your assets once you pass on.
Wow.
That is amazing. I've learned so much.
So doesn't it?
Actually, it's making me think, oh, child.
What have you been doing with your life? But it's such a good way to kick off the new year.
Definitely.
Just, you know, thinking ahead, planning ahead, making responsible decisions, and, you know, that delayed gratification.
That hit hard, right?
That one hit me hard. I don't know what that means, but I'm about to find out.
Gratification. No, you're right.
Yeah, but thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity. And I'll just part by saying all of this is a journey. So enjoy the journey as much as the destination. So even though some steps may seem really hard, and the discipline may required may look impossible, just enjoy the journey. The process is very much rewarding when you see the fruit at the end of it.
And I'd like to say, actually, this is something that Carl is very passionate about, just educating people. You know, we've had our own set of experiences where we are just like, whoo, you know, when you help somebody through something, and then you're like, that better not be me in the future. I better put things in place right now to ensure that is not me. So thanks so much for sharing your wisdom. I'm sure our listeners have taken a lot out of it.
Thank you for having me.
Delve so deep into so many different areas and situations and circumstances. So that's been truly helpful, really.
I'm looking forward to you coming back.
Oh yes,
I'd like
you're coming back.
Yes, yes.
For an encore.
Bringing us the chips, you'll come back and do another episode. But
yes,
one of the episodes that I'd like us to look at is how we can manage our finances through the decades. So in your 20s, what should you be looking at? In your 30s, in your 40s?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I think that'll be that's very true. Helpful.
Yeah, that's important, actually, because you won't be able to do everything you want to do every time of your life.
Yeah.
So yes, I'd be honored to come back.
Awesome. And you will. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Life Lady podcast. You know what to do. Please subscribe. It's completely free and it'll mean you'll be the first to know when an episode goes live. So don't forget to leave a review. It would mean so much to us. It also helps us get discovered. You can also join the conversation on Instagram at Life Lately Pod. We'll be back on Monday at 6 a.m. with a new episode. Thanks for listening. Bye.